Well, hi and congratulations. I'm Art Subcheck. And you are in the top 10 to 20% of people who actually work on their self-development as it relates to their sales success. And I'm assuming that you are interested in working on your mindset, your attitude, and your reactions to resistance, no's, setbacks, and rejection. And you're in the right place because we're going to cover all of that so that you can actually look forward to placing calls with a positive attitude every time, not be bothered by the inevitable no's, and get more of what you want by helping others get what they want. So let's start off right away with the biggest challenge most salespeople face as it relates to their attitude. Now, you've picked a profession where every day you expose yourself to and even seek out potentially negative outcomes. What's wrong with you? No, just kidding. It's like going out and intentionally playing in heavy traffic right in the middle of a four-lane highway. I mean, let's face it, every once in a while you're going to get nicked. Occasionally, yeah, you'll take one broadside, and that's part of the game. In fact, if you're not getting those, that means you're not in the game. A baseball player is going to make outs. A basketball player is going to miss shots. It's all part of the game. And what's critical to your success in sales is how you react to those missed shots. You see, many salespeople have been conditioned to use the term rejection as it relates to what happens to them on sales calls. And as a result, that's what they feel. But actually, rejection is not an experience itself. It's how you define the experience. Let me repeat that. Rejection is not the experience. It's your definition of the experience. Eleanor Roosevelt said that no one can make you feel inferior without your consent. And I've changed that slightly for sales. No one can reject you without your consent. Only you can allow yourself to feel down or rejected as a result of something that happens to you. You have complete and total personal responsibility for how you feel based on anything that happens to you. It's always your choice. You can feel rejected, or you can choose to say that you've accomplished something. One thing is for certain in sales, and that is stuff is going to happen to you. That's right. It's inevitable. If you're making calls, things are going to happen. Rejection, however, is always optional. How you react to the no's determines your attitude and your subsequent results for the rest of the day, the week, the month, the year, your career. I always say that everything you accomplish in sales is about 10% attributable to the mechanics. The stuff you say, your process, your techniques, your words. And the other 90%, that is due to your attitude. And there's probably not another profession where attitude plays such a huge role in your work output. Hey, someone in your accounting department could probably come in feeling lousy with a bad attitude and still crunch the numbers adequately. But if you place calls with the same attitude, that negative attitude, well, you know what the results are going to be, right? Okay, so what should we do to keep our attitudes high and never experience rejection again? Well, for a long time, I've advocated the use of a secondary objective on your calls. That's in addition to your primary objective. Now, your primary objective must always be set. Now, I define that as, what do you want this person to do as a result of this call? Now, in my other training and my courses, we go into that one topic on primary objectives quite a bit in detail. But for now, let's just say you need to have a primary objective on every call first. Now, here's where we're going to avoid rejection. This is where we set a secondary objective. And I define that as, what can you accomplish or even attempt at minimum on a call? And this doesn't have to be what you want the prospect or customer to do, like the primary objective. It is simply what you want to do or even just attempt. Now, you see, this will ensure that you're never rejected again Because if you can salvage something on every call, regardless of how minor, you've accomplished something. And instead of feeling rejected, you now have a sense of achievement at the end of the day. Instead of saying, oh, I got rejected all day long, you can say that, well, I accomplished my primary objective 4 times, and the remainder of my calls, I accomplished my secondary objective. Now, this is essential, because if you simply absorbed no after no, if you took the beating call after call, I don't care how positive you are, eventually it might start eating away at you, and then you'd stop placing calls, and people do or don't place the calls. So therefore, you should be proactive in first setting and then going after your secondary objectives. As examples, these could be asking specific questions, for example, or finding out who their primary vendor is, asking for a referral, asking if you can be a secondary source for them, or simply leaving the door open for a future contact. It's not rocket science here. Now then, as a side benefit of the secondary objective, you can likely harvest some of the seeds that you've planted. For example, I often tell the story of the travel agency sales rep years ago who I tried to give the brush off to on a call. He was prospecting me, and I explained to him I wasn't a prospect for him because I formerly used his company in the past, and then when my personal agent left and she went to a much larger company, I followed her over there, and what he did was he simply asked if anything ever happened to my relationship there, if he could be the first one in line. And I said, well, sure. And then he asked me what would have to happen what would have to happen that would cause me to even look anywhere else. And I thought, wow, that was a good question. And then I gave him a couple of situations. Well, fast forward, sure enough, one of those things happened a few months later, and I did give him a call. So you can plant similar seeds on your calls, and you're accomplishing that as well as feeling good about it, right? Let's take a listen to a sales rep and how she reacts to a prospect who gives her a no.
Look, we're going to stay with who we've been buying from. We're happy with our current supplier.
Oh, well, keep us in mind for next time.
Did you notice how she had a tone of disappointment in her voice and then simply gave up? It's likely that she'd feel badly about that call since she didn't accomplish anything. Now, let's take the same scenario. We'll take our same sales rep again, who probably felt rejected on that previous call, and let's see how she attempts a secondary objective on this call.
Look, we're going to stay with who we've been buying from. We're happy with our current supplier.
You know what? No problem. But since you're familiar with us, could I be the first that you would consider if anything happens where they couldn't deliver for you?
Well, I guess so.
Great. I'll put you on my email newsletter and send you my card. If anything ever happens with them, please give me a call or I'll check back with you every few months or so.
That'll be fine.
All right, so she didn't accomplish her primary objective, but what does she do? Well, now at least she can say she had a win on that call, which of course is much better than feeling rejected, and she planted a seed for the future. Whether or not you're rejected, it's not up to the prospect. It doesn't rely on what happens to you. It's always reliant on how you react and how you define what happens to you. So here's a very simple action step that's going to have a huge payoff for you in terms of never being rejected again and keeping a positive attitude. And that is for you to have a secondary objective on every call. Make a commitment to do that, and I guarantee that you're never going to be rejected again. All right, so continuing on with the topic of not feeling rejected, here are some instances of how I've seen rejected sales reps handle everyday situations, and then they taint them with the self-defeating thoughts and actions that they have in their brain. And then what I'll do for you is I'll contrast that with what the successful sales pros, the achievers, do to constantly reach new heights and avoid what most people call rejection. So first, a rejected sales rep will burn through calls, hearing no after no. Then they slam the phone down after each one, or they just hit the button, ending each call negatively. Now, the successful sales pro accomplishes something on every call, just like our example before. Even if that primary objective is not achieved, whether it be the sale or the appointment, he or she always has a fallback position, something that he or she can accomplish on every call, even if it's just as minor as getting agreement to leave that door open for the future, or just questioning the objection. We can look at that as a success. Regardless of how minor that might be, it means that you did not experience rejection and you did not let that call pull your attitude down. A successful rep accepts the fact that he or she's going to get no's, and lots of them, and then more. And he or she judges success based on their attempts and not just the yes answers. Whereas a rejected sales rep associates a no with who he or she is as a person. A successful sales pro does not take it personally. He or she realizes it's not him or her. Prospects are saying no to the ideas that they just presented. The successful sales pro recognizes that the prospect or customer simply did not have an immediate perceived need right at that very moment. And by the way, that could change in the future, right? The rejected sales rep mopes around after they get a no. Or worse, it causes them to be reluctant to place the next call. I've seen sales reps who couldn't recall what they had for lunch yesterday, but they could relive every no of the day. On the other hand, the successful sales pro realizes the last call he or she made has absolutely no bearing on the next one. The fact that he or she did not meet their primary objective in the previous call doesn't affect their attitude or their presentation on the next one. They dissect the last call, then they move on. They don't dwell on it. Instead, they wipe away any negative thoughts from their memory, and they realize that their biggest sale ever could be the very next time they pick up the phone. And they're always prepared for that. The rejected sales rep pounds out no after no, simply hoping they're that much closer to a yes, because so many people have told them that it's just a numbers game. Well, it's not. If you do the same thing over and over and you keep getting the bad results, you're going to get more of the same. On the other hand, the successful sales pro learns from each no. They analyze exactly why the objective was not accomplished. They figure out if they could have done anything differently. Think about your calls in similar situations. Were you ready for the objections? Was your opening statement stimulating and interesting? Could you have changed anything? Be sure you know how to handle every situation the next time it arises if it didn't go the way you'd like on this call. Understanding and learning from a call with a negative result helps to diffuse the feeling of negativity. Now, the rejected sales rep expects negative outcomes. It's not a coincidence that negative people attract negative circumstances. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Successful sales pro acts as if he or she has already achieved his or her goal. I asked a sales superstar how he became so successful, and he told me his life changed when he started acting like a top performer even before he got there. He studied the people who pulled down the big numbers and the dollars. Their behavior started coming early before they actually achieved what they were looking for. Also, what they do is they come in early. They don't squander phone time. They ask for commitment more often. And in this case, the sales rep said he always expected to do well, and the results followed. Being able to reject the concept of being rejected without feeling dejected is a key to success in sales. So follow these ideas and you'll be able to brush aside the no's while cherishing the yeses. So again, the single most important key by far to your personal success is your attitude and self-motivation. Sure, I've devoted my entire career to helping people succeed in sales by doing and saying the right things, and that is important, but really, none of that matters unless you have confidence in yourself, an achievement attitude, and the desire to make things happen. Over the years, I've seen many people with talent squander it away and wallow in the pits of life because that was precisely what they expected, mediocrity. They didn't have the desire to work and tap into their talents. And as a result of their negative attitudes, they became hardened and the cycle continued. Pathetic, really. Stay away from these people because they'll try to pull you into their hole of hopelessness. On the other hand, the most successful and not coincidentally wealthiest salespeople I've ever been around are those that have an insatiable desire to succeed, to do better. They don't complain about things. Instead, they take the cards they're dealt and make the most of them. They make things happen. They're focused on achievement. There's no doubt in their mind they're going to get there. And I believe you're that type of person. Now, I can't motivate you. In fact, no one can motivate you except who? You. What I can and will do in this module is share with you some of the great success and self-motivational ideas I've studied over the years and used and have shared with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people over the years. These ideas are in no particular order, and it's not a step-by-step program like everything else you've gone through up to this point. So that means anytime you pick up this audio or start listening to it, regardless of where you left off, you're going to hear some great ideas that just might click with you at that moment and cause these motivational fires to roar. So let's get started. Anyone who's been in sales has experienced it. You probably have. I certainly have too. It's a slump, a rut, one of those everything or everyone is dumping on me types of attitudes, or maybe just a feeling like, I don't feel like making calls today. The real key to success is how you deal with that, because human nature, it is going to happen. So how you get and keep yourself motivated is the key. That's right. I said how you motivate yourself. And again, no one can motivate you. Just like no one can stress you out or reject you, you alone can allow yourself to be affected by outside influences. So therefore, it's critical, especially in this profession, that you have a never-ending plan that keeps your outlook and correspondingly your performance at sky-high levels. And there is one proven way to do that consistently. You've heard this before: goals. Everything of significance that you've ever achieved was likely first visualized by you as a target. Great stuff just doesn't automatically happen. To get more motivated and stay that way, you need targets to shoot for. So here's some tips for setting and reaching your targets, your goals, and staying motivated. First, pick goals that you desire passionately. If you just mildly wish for something, you won't get the drive to pursue it and weather the storms that you're going to encounter along the way, like we all do. For example, if you just wouldn't mind dropping a few pounds, that's nowhere near strong enough. Now, if you feel you must lose 15 pounds because you absolutely refuse to go up another clothes size and you've had it with feeling sluggish all the time, then you'll likely do what it takes to shed that excess baggage. Next, pick goals that you can see yourself attaining. Before you begin, you've got to be able to visualize the end result. Otherwise, your subconscious will never buy into the notion that you can accomplish it. People never rise above their own self-perception. If you can't see yourself earning $20,000 more than you do today, you'll never get there. Conversely, if you visualize yourself already there, you'll think of what you need to do to actually reach that destination. Pick goals you're willing to work hard to achieve. Everyone would like to make more money, but a small percentage is willing to do what it takes to make it a reality. That's why lotteries are so popular. Whatever you select as a goal has trade-offs attached. Only if you're willing to work and sacrifice will you reach that goal. Next, when setting your goals, remove your doubts. Hey, most of us fly way too close to the ground. Doubts are not the result of rational thinking, but habitual thinking. So write out some of the self-limiting beliefs that are now like weights strapped to your feet, and then rewrite them in a positive, possibility thinking sort of way. For example, a self-limiting belief might be, I've never been able to close the large accounts where the big commissions are. Well, that could be modified to, what I need to do is analyze what other people do who consistently close the large accounts and then work my own strategy to close them. Next, take risks. Yeah, it's a bit spooky when you're treading into territory that you've never traveled before. But hey, it's also motivating. Plus, the only risks that aren't just a little bit scary are the ones you've already outgrown. Don't let the details get in the way either. Fussing about the details burdens your thinking, and then it fuels the fires of doubt. After setting your goal, immediately set the machinery in motion. It's easier to view the possibilities when you're moving. Plus, that eliminates worry. Don't fret about what happens in the middle of a jump. Focus on the end instead. All right, let's talk a little about avoiding rejection. A sales rep asked me, after I had listened to a few of his calls, which really weren't as bad as he thought, "Art, why am I getting rejected all the time?" Well, my answer to him was, because that's what you're viewing it as. You see, as we already talked about, only you can allow yourself to feel rejected. No one can reject you, right? We all have standards we use to measure ourselves, and most people are way too liberal when defining rejection. Therefore, they tend to avoid the behavior that causes whatever they've defined it as. Making phone calls, that's one of them. And they're much too conservative when they're measuring success. So loosen up your collar a little bit. Find rewards in the process of doing your job. Don't be infatuated just with the end result all the time. Enjoy the moment-to-moment absorption in the activity of talking to and helping people. I remember years ago when I was on the phone 8 hours a day pounding out 50 calls to different people in various industries. It was a buzz just learning about so many unique businesses and their needs. Next, take pride in how well you do your job. Strive for and expect excellence, but also take time out occasionally to soak in what you've accomplished along the way. Also, avoid depending on others to tell you how well you're doing. Let's face it, no one is told enough how much they're appreciated, how good they are, how much they're loved. Therefore, if your self-esteem depends on public approval from others, you grant them incredible power over you and your attitude, and it makes you vulnerable to gut-wrenching disappointment if you don't get it. So develop an internal set of checkpoints to guide you. When you reach them, reward yourself. Bathe in the shining light of your accomplishment. Understand how your sales efforts contribute to a greater good, the need fulfillment of others. Hey, people only buy from you because the results that you deliver help them. Take a look at your 10 largest accounts and dwell on what buying from you really means to them in terms of profits or other results. And if you can't answer this, you've probably got some serious questioning to do during your sales process. Next, see yourself as a problem solver. If not, you're going to be stymied every time you run into an objection. And don't be afraid of risk and potential setbacks. Robert Schuller asks, what one great thing would you do if you knew you could not fail? I have a philosophy on motivation. Out of everything we accomplish in life, 10% can be attributed to what we know and 90% to how we feel about doing it. If your internal flames burn all the time, I'm betting you're an achiever. And you also know you can't look to other people and things to motivate you. It's got to come from within. Whenever I personally need to fan the flames, as we all do to keep them roaring, I'll go through my volumes of self-improvement books and audios and dive in. Even better, I love attending motivational seminars. I met the late, great Zig Ziglar several times and got more pumped up every time I heard his great ideas. Let me share a few that I've written down and practiced over the years. Too many people concentrate on what they don't want instead of what they do want. For example, take the sales rep who hopes he or she doesn't quickly get brushed off the phone. With that attitude, of course, the inevitable occurs. An interesting phenomenon is that we tend to experience what we fear the most. A woman at a seminar confessed to me that she's so surprised to make it to the questioning part of her call that she doesn't know what to do from there. So come on, let's play to win instead of to not lose. Now, we've already talked about goals, and Zig said that if you're thoroughly committed to achieving a goal and you run into difficulty, which, of course, we inevitably do, we look for solutions. On the other hand, the person without focus on a goal and the accompanying commitment tends to throw in the towel or just accept mediocrity when they're faced with dilemmas. Here's one of my favorite quotes from Zig. What you do off the job determines what you do on the job. You likely have enough time at work to learn and build skills, which allows you to do a passable job. But becoming a superstar relies on the extra effort you put in. The reading, the listening to recordings, the practicing that you do on your own. And finally, motivation gets you going, but habits get you there. I'm sure most people who leave or who left Zig's seminars felt inspired, entertained, and motivated, but only those who took his excellent ideas and made them habits realize the true prosperity that everyone says they want, but few actually attain. Tiger Woods has certainly had his share of adversity the past few years, but regardless of how you feel about him personally, there is no denying the force he was when he first burst onto the professional golf tour and then for years afterward. I still remember the week I actually saw it on TV when he turned pro in the fall of 1996. So in that fall of 96, he had immediate success, won a couple tournaments. And then he continued his hot streak by winning his very first tournament of the 1997 season in early January. Afterward, a reporter asked him what he's thinking and what his goals are before he enters the tournament. And I actually remember seeing this interview. Tiger started to answer, and then he stopped himself. And then he, and again, he's 20, 21 at the time. And then in an aw shucks kind of tone, he said, nah, I better not say that. Now, keep in mind, his confidence was often mistaken for cockiness, and plenty of jealousy was present among people who felt he was getting undue attention. But then, what happened in the interview? He straightened up and he said something very profound. He said, yeah, I'm going to say it. I go out there expecting to win every tournament. Why would I play otherwise? And then he continued explaining that, hey, you know, some guys are satisfied to just be in the top 60 after the first couple of days during a tournament. Actually, the way golf tournaments work is that the rest don't get to play the final 2 days. They don't have a chance at earning prize money unless they're in the top 60 or unless they make the cut. So some people were just content to make the cut.
So think about this. What are your expectations, both the short and the long term? Some sales reps are content just getting by, just making the cut. Others consistently are at the top of the sales charts. If you ask them, they'll likely tell you they expect nothing less. Some sales reps approach each call just to see if there might be any interest there. High achievers expect to take the call as far as they possibly can, and they do. They begin calls with a specific, ambitious objective, whether it be the sale or the appointment. Remember, we covered that in setting our objectives, right? Think big. So what's the difference between high and low performing sales reps? Self-confidence, belief in themselves, and their expectations. But what about the skill, you might ask? Well, sure, it's important. But again, I've seen plenty of reps who had the tools to succeed, but not the desire or the expectation. I've seen many more who never would be called naturals when they first started, but they expected to do well, and they found ways to make it happen. Napoleon Hill, in his Law of Success, said, "If you demand success of yourself and back up this demand with intelligent action, you are sure to win." There is a difference, though, between demanding success and merely wishing for it. In The Psychology of Winning, Dr. Dennis Whately says, "Every individual tends to receive what he or she expects. You may or may not get what's coming to you, but you will always get what you expect. Losers typically expect little, and they get it. Worse, losers expect bad things to happen, and they do." You've seen these people before. They can darken a room just by entering it. They're the ones consistently complaining about everything from the softness of their chairs to the crumminess of their territory. All the while, the action-oriented, expectant sales reps are doing what the others say can't be done. So here's a couple ideas for you to implement right now. First, raise your long-term expectations. Set a yearly or quarterly goal that's 25, 50, maybe 100% higher than what you've ever achieved. Don't think of how hard it would be to achieve. Instead, ask yourself, what do I need to do to get there? Next, approach every call with the expectation of achieving the highest conceivable end result. Sure, you won't get there every call, but you know what your results over time will be, you know they will be much higher than with low or no expectations. So I challenge you to go out there and expect success. Do you ever challenge yourself? Can you think of any experiences within the past month where you knowingly and willingly or even volunteered to enter a situation that caused you to feel scared, inadequate, challenged, anxious, or in over your head? If you can't, you're likely not testing your limits. You're probably coasting along and not growing as much as you could be. Oh, sure, it's rewarding to work so hard that you become a smooth sales rep, asking and answering questions with ease and never inserting a long where words should be, confidently and routinely handling every call. But if you start thinking you're too good to improve, ignoring what got you to that level in the first place, you're going to be slipping down the backside of that mountain and might not even realize it. The path of least resistance usually leads to mediocrity. Regardless of how good you are, to continue growing, you constantly need to invite and even seek out fresh, more difficult challenges. The scarier, the better. Here are a few ideas for tackling new challenges and risks. Channel your anxious feelings into positive energy. This is critical. Worrying is an emotion that handcuffs you mentally. If you fear something, you can either let it possess you or you can take action to control it. It's amazing how action vaporizes anxiety. Next, tackle your most intimidating, dreaded task right out of the starting gate each day. Maybe it's that call to the huge prospect, the one that is a bit intimidating. We tend to put off what we fear the most. Then our energies turn into avoidance instead of action. and this cripples our other activities. Next, laugh at, but learn from your mistakes and shortcomings. And naturally, we all experience these. Why do you think they call them growing pains? Just like our muscles, we grow personally when we're pushed to the point of failure. Look at those instances humorously. It's said that we can look back on most every mistake and humiliating experience we've ever encountered and laugh at them. I just have to chuckle at the times I experienced mind vapor lock on some of my past calls. But in every case, the short-term pain was the motivation that compelled me to do whatever necessary so it wouldn't happen again. Next, recall the quantum leaps you've made and how you grew as a result. You walked for the first time. You talked. You rode a bike. You drove a car. Those were major accomplishments at that time. Hey, then it became second nature. Everything that is routine for you right now was likely a major deal before you did it the first time. And that's also true for everything that you've yet to do. Does asking for larger orders cause your antiperspirant to kick in, causing you to avoid asking at all? Well, how about doing it more often? Get some successes. Make it a habit. Then it's routine. It's expected. Hey, you shrug it off. No big deal. And think about how proud you felt after tackling a tough task, win or lose. I bet being lazy and avoiding work never gave you such a great feeling, right? And finally, say yes to scary situations. Don't be afraid to venture out on the high wire without a net. It's not as bad as you think initially. Mountain climbers say that looking at a mountain from the base can be pretty intimidating, but once they're halfway up, it doesn't seem nearly as scary. Sure, you're good, but not nearly as good as you can be. So live closer to the edge regarding your challenges. You're going to be more motivated, and your growth will be perpetual. All right, more brief tips on attitude and self-motivation. First, do things differently. Nothing tastes good when it's stale, right? And if you walk down the same path of grass repeatedly, it's going to kill the grass. And eventually, it makes a rut. Make a list of all the things about the way that you do what you do, your job, your life, and what you could change for the better. Make them challenging. It's amazing how changing your perspective can freshen things up. Trade recordings of your calls with other sales reps and managers. The best reps I've ever seen and been around are those who are always improving. They're never satisfied with their level of expertise, and they record themselves on a regular basis. Now, listening to your own recordings is great. That's a start. But the next level is opening yourself up to evaluation by others. Oh, I know most people will dismiss this idea, and I know most people aren't even close also to earning the money they could be capable of if they put forth the effort. So record your calls, share them with other people. Next, refuse to be rejected. I know we talked about this before, but it's one of the biggest fears of salespeople. Eleanor Roosevelt said, "No one can make you feel inferior without your consent. Likewise, no one can reject you without your consent." If you approach every call with the objective of at minimum learning something from the call, you'll at least accomplish something that, regardless of the outcome, will be positive. Keep in mind that if you didn't have a yes answer going into the call, so what if you get the no? Next, why not do your very best all the time? To paraphrase Brian Tracy, if you're going to do something anyway, why not commit to doing it the best you possibly can? I'm astounded by the stories of how people camp out several days in advance of Black Friday at Best Buy to save a couple $100 on a TV. It just makes me wonder how many of these same people apply a fraction of that same passion and energy and time investment into making themselves better. Don't create difficulty. After all these years, I'm still perplexed by the salespeople who create resistance every time they pick up the phone. Yet they keep doing it. I mean, even lab test animals voluntarily quit doing things that hurt after some repetition. Many sales reps are ill-prepared and say the same things that are guaranteed to get them resistance in openings and in voicemails and go-nowhere questions on their calls. A participant at one of my seminars summed it up pretty nicely. He said, "You know, it seems to me that it's really not that hard to do the right things on the phone and get success as opposed to doing the wrong things that keep getting doors and phones slammed in your face." Bam! Precisely! That's the revelation that all sales reps should have at some point. It's kind of like putting on glasses for the first time after living with bad vision. Next, think larger. How do you know what you can't do? I'm not talking about what you think you can't do. Those are the self-imposed limitations you've been believing up until now. When you analyze it, there's very little you're not capable of if you really try. So set a larger target for yourself and say, why not? You realize what you've been missing and you'll be more motivated as you go after your goal. Next, feed your mind. Often people are depressed and are reluctant to place calls because they have these same old negative thoughts running through their mind like a recording stuck on replay. Here's what I suggest you do. Take a little field trip with a credit card in hand through your local Barnes & Noble, or if you don't have one close, just jump online at Amazon. Now, here's what you want to do. Bypass what I call the chewing gum for the mind sections. Mysteries, love stories. So go to the self-improvement section. Then go to the business, sales, and self-help sections. And find a few things that are really interesting to you. Buy a few. And then, with a pen and highlighter in hand, go to work. Stop every few pages. Take notes on an action plan. It's impossible for your mind to be preoccupied with negative thoughts when you're focused on positive action. Next, hang with achievers. You've probably seen that humorous quote. It's tough to soar with the eagles when you hang with turkeys. Think of some of the most successful people you know, those you really admire. I'll bet they don't engage in little pity parties or blame others or circumstances for things that go wrong. Achievers exude a positive attitude, and it's infectious. So go and catch it. Recall your most motivated moments. When were you last fired up, storming towards something you desired with the intensity of an out-of-control freight train thundering down a mountain? What were you pursuing? This gives you a clue to what you really want and why. Can you and are you willing to repeat that desire and the tactics again? Maybe you are right now. If you're not, why not? Expect to excel. If you ask winners, they'll tell you matter-of-factly that there was never a doubt that they'd achieve their lofty levels. Sure, they ran into roadblocks along the way, but progress has a way of masquerading as problems. And of course, they continue prodding along. Next, act as if you've already achieved your goal. I asked a superstar sales rep to what he attributed his success, and he told me his life changed when he started acting like a top performer, even before he got there. He studied the people who pulled down the big numbers and dollars, and he copied their behavior, coming in early, not squandering phone time, asking for more commitments more often, going after bigger sales, and expecting to do well. And guess what? His results followed. Next, walk 25% faster. Yeah, I'm serious. Don't laugh. Psychologists have proven body posture and movement affects attitude. Have you ever seen a loser walk with a spring in his step like he actually had something important to do? No, just kind of shuffle along, shoulders slumped, right? Conversely, Watch the gait of achievers that you admire. Their confident stride says, I'm coming from something I just achieved and I'm marching over to conquer another challenge. Next, don't dwell on the previous call. Focus instead on what you're going to do next. You can get motivational ideas everywhere if you look for them. I got this one in a golf magazine. An instructional article explained that most people who consistently shoot poorly get frustrated and upset after a bad shot. The negative feelings and self-talk linger into the next shot, and the debilitating thoughts continue affecting each subsequent shot. I've been there on the golf course. Have you ever had bad days on the phone like that? Well, the article suggested that after a bad shot or phone call, in our case, you should immediately focus on your next one. After all, you can't do anything about what is past, right? Place your emphasis where it belongs, on what you can and will do next. Speaking of next, think action now. Rid from your vocabulary the words tomorrow, later, one of these days, someday, and other wish-oriented, vague terminology that typically results in never type of behavior. Anytime you're tempted to lazily shove an achievement-oriented task out to the ambiguous horizon, stop yourself and take action now, immediately. You also need to protect your attitude. A seminar attendee, Judy Owens with Norfolk Southern, told me that what she's done to keep a positive attitude is, she said she decided a few years ago that she wasn't going to let the little things bother her. Just like she protects her house from being robbed by locking the doors and windows, she keeps herself from being robbed of a positive outlook. She refuses to let other things or people take that away from her. How true. Only you can allow yourself to be victimized by external circumstances when it comes to your attitude. So refuse to let anyone or anything take it away from you. Here are a few tips for clearing your head of any negatives that might pull down your productivity. Number one, ask yourself action-oriented questions after calls. Instead of thinking, oh man, that call really stunk, instead, say, what would I have done differently on that call? That's part of our post-call review, right? Number two, judge success by your attempts. Don't dwell on negative outcomes. Instead, congratulate yourself on your activity. And of course, we want to make sure it's quality activity. Number three, don't take yourself too seriously. Be able to laugh at your mistakes. So what if you blew a call? Learn from it, laugh it off, and move on. Four, as I've mentioned several times, is that remember only you can allow yourself to feel rejected. That's because rejection is not the experience, it's your definition of the experience. So change your definition. And number five, energize your body. If you're feeling as blah as a beach seal, jump out of your chair. Take a brisk walk. Put that bounce in your step. Poke your head outside. Fill your lungs with fresh air. Even if you have to force it, plaster a smile on your face. The mind will eventually follow the body's lead, and you'll coerce yourself into feeling good. Speaking of enthusiasm, if you act enthusiastic, you're going to feel enthusiastic. According to Believe and Achieve, W. Clement Stone's 17 Principles of Success, here are six of his ideas. These are quick. Number one, talk loudly. Number two, talk rapidly. Number three, emphasize. Stress words that are important. Number four, hesitate. Pausing after a word you wish to emphasize accentuates the emphasis. Five, put a smile in your voice. Do it by putting a smile on your face and a smile in your eyes, and that comes through. Number six, modulate. Vary your pitch and tone. Did you know your own imagined limits are always closer than your real ones? Let me just give you a sampling of statements that I've heard from sales reps. See if you've ever repeated any of these yourself. The most talk time per day we can do is about 180 minutes. Yeah, I don't have much luck in the afternoon getting a hold of a lot of people. Yeah, about 25 calls a day is the most I can do. I max out at 60,000 every year. Those smaller prospects just aren't worth calling. There's just not enough time to get everything done. Those bigger accounts, they're out of my league. Having high goals just sets you up for failure. Now, for the most part, those are self-limiting perceptions that unfortunately transform into very real behavior, and the cycle continues. The feelings harden, and the believers then find it even more difficult to reach those make-believe limits. I suggest addressing limits like you would objections. Question them. Similar to objections, it's astounding how they can evaporate, clearing the way for opportunities that were always there, yet clouded by our limiting beliefs. So, what do you believe are your limits right now? Take those self-imposed limits and ask yourself these questions. Upon what solid evidence do I base this belief? Has exceeding this limit ever been done before by anyone? And if not, why not? Who is getting results greater than my self-imposed limit? And how are they doing that? Why couldn't I do more and do better? Do I really have the desire to crash through this make-believe barrier? Can I create that desire? And what do I need to do in order to break out of this limit? What really gets my own juices flowing is spending time with people who act as if achievement is a foregone conclusion. The thought of falling short of their goals is not even a possibility. Know anyone like that? Spend time with them, and it's virtually impossible to not get swept into their infectious behavior, right? A self-limiting believer would say, oh, this month or quarter or year is half over and it's too late to set an ambitious goal. I'd never reach that. So think about this. What are you saying right now? Speaking of top achievers, what do you think the number one hobby is among Fortune 500 executives? Well, it's reading, according to J. Conrad Levinson in his book, The 90-Minute Hour. Sure, some of that reading is undoubtedly leisurely, but for the most part, the reading is educational. High learning equals high earning. I recall attending a seminar by Brian Tracy, and he asked, what do you think you'll find in abundance in the homes of every self-made millionaire? Books. Similar, Jim Rohn said, poor people have big TVs. Rich people have big libraries. So what does this have to do with your success in selling? Well, just everything. You are the sum total of your life's experiences up to this point. The only way you can better yourself and get better results is to do things differently. And the best results come through acquiring more knowledge, which builds confidence and then desire. And that translates into what? Action. Books and newsletters and audios and videos, online and off, help you to accelerate the learning process, since experience isn't necessarily the best teacher. Hey, practice does not make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect. No time to follow a self-study program, you say? Think again. Analyze how much time per week you spend watching TV, perusing mind-numbing Facebook or other online posts, reading trash about celebrities or misfits, or driving to and from work or anyway with the radio blaring. Or maybe you're just plugged into a music player. Still think you couldn't squeeze in a few minutes per day investing in yourself and your future income stream? Well, think again. Most of us can very easily. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not suggesting you need to purge all leisure activity from your life. Far from it. Hey, I read the sports page every day, and I love watching cooking shows. But I know, unless I'm constantly pouring new and challenging self-development material into my head, I'm stagnating, or worse, letting the brain get a little mushy around the edges. I also know my best ideas are germinated from books and other literature and by listening to audios, watching videos. And I hear the same thing from every super successful and wealthy salesperson I've ever been in contact with. So, you want to make a quantum leap in your self-development? Well, bypass the fiction and autobiography sections at your bookstore. Head for the business and self-improvement sections instead. The mind is like a muscle. If you feed it, exercise it, stretch it to the point of failure, it grows. Oh, and so does your income and your opportunities. Okay, we're just about to the end of this module. You've heard plenty of ideas. So let's imagine for a moment. Here's a scenario for you. So your boss calls you into his or her office, informs you that, unfortunately, there's going to be some major cutbacks in the staff. Uh-oh. Now, people in sales, though, would be able to keep their job only if they sign a commitment to do several things. Number one, every minute they're at work, they've got to display an achievement-oriented attitude. Number two, they've got to think of one thing they could do that would increase their sales production a minimum of 20%, and then they have to do it. Now, would you be willing to make that commitment? I'm sure you would. So why not do it right now? The key here is the desire to do it. If you're focused on that one goal, the activity that will put you over the 20%, it's amazing how obstacles don't seem significant any longer. Resistance doesn't appear to be the morale-squashing rejection it once appeared as. So get working on your own 20% and don't even stop there. All right, I'm going to finish with an affirmation that I've shared with hundreds of groups over the years. It's written by Pat Williams, who's a great motivator, author, and former general manager of the Orlando Magic basketball team. It's called Winners versus Losers. Here it goes. When a winner makes a mistake, he says, "I was wrong." When a loser makes a mistake, he says, "Well, it wasn't my fault." A winner works harder than a loser and has more time. A loser is always too busy to do what is necessary. A winner goes through a problem. A loser goes around it and never gets past it. A winner makes commitments. A loser makes promises. A winner says, "I'm good, but not as good as I can be." A loser says, "Well, I'm not as bad as a lot of other people." A winner listens. A loser just waits until it's his turn to talk next. A winner respects those who are superior to him and tries to learn something from them. A loser resents those who are superior and tries to find chinks in their armor. A winner feels responsible for more than his or her job. A loser says, "Well, you know what? I just work here." A winner says, "There's got to be a better way to do this." A loser says, "Eh, that's the way it's always been done before." And let me add one more to this list. A loser waits for things to happen, but a winner takes action. So with that, go out there and take that action.